But what we like to do on Tuesday nights is talk music, of course, and talk to a great musician or an artist who loves their music and has great stories to tell about it. And our guest tonight will be the wonderful soprano, speaker, businesswoman, creative and social entrepreneur, Tanya de Jong. She's very passionate about music and creative industries. And she's also a co-founder of Mind Medicine Australia, which advocates for the use of psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy. And we will hear from her after her song. This is called Avenue Malakunu. Tanya de Jong on Evenings. Tanya de Jong on ABC Radio. It's from her album Flying Free. It's a really crossover album of classical music, originals and classic songs. And she's also a member of a group Potpourri, which performs all over the world. And she's our music teacher here tonight on ABC Evenings. Hello, Tanya.
Hello, Sarah.
Great to have you on the show. Now, let's talk about this track because it is related to some new music and a theatre work you're doing called Driftwood, opening later this year.
That's right. And it's very exciting, actually, because we're in the process of creating a new Australian music theatre work based on my mother's book, which is called Driftwood, which was released about 3 years ago and tells the story of my grandmother Slava Horowitz's invention of the foldable umbrella in Vienna in 1929, and then my grandparents' escape from the Nazis with my mum, who was just 3 months old at the time, in 1939. They fled to Singapore first, and then they fled Singapore. Actually, they were shipped out of Singapore on the Queen Mary just before Singapore fell, and eventually were interned in Tatura in northern Victoria, and eventually allowed to come back into society in Melbourne after a significant period of years in Tatura and restarted their lives as artists. And sadly, then my grandmother, the inventor, had said farewell to her sister at the train station in Europe when they said their farewells, and they didn't know if one another were alive. For 4 years, they eventually found out that both were still alive, which was a joyous moment, but then they found out that pretty much all the rest of our family had been killed in the Holocaust. The sisters continued to communicate via letters for the next 30 years and met one more time in Paris in 1968 before both of them passed away. So we've
what
commissioned.
A story to tell in a musical theatre piece. That's and you're going to play the role of your grandmother.
That's right, and we've commissioned the wonderful Australian playwright Jane Bodie to adapt Driftwood into a play. She's done a magnificent job of that and worked with my mother on that. And Anthony Barnhill, whose wonderful arrangement you heard in that recording, has written original compositions and arrangements for Driftwood. And then we've got the wonderful Wesley Enoch as our director. So it's extremely exciting. And, please look out for that, everyone. Driftwood coming later this year and world premieres in Sydney and Melbourne. And then we hope to be followed by other touring around Australia and potentially internationally after that.
What an incredible story about amazing women in your life, because you were actually were born in the Netherlands rather than in Australia, because your dad was Dutch. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. So my father was actually during the war, he was hidden by various Catholic families who risked their lives to hide these little Jewish boys, my father and his brother. And his father worked in the underground just trying to move the little boys to save their lives from house to house. Mm. He never really spoke about this much for his whole life until 2 or 3 years before he passed away. And it was just incredible to hear about. And they had a lot of false papers, you know, that they had to keep reproducing so that they could, you know, just keep staying alive and not being taken away. But, yes, I was born in the Netherlands, so Dutch was my first language. And I feel that, you know, quite a lot of my heart, I guess, is in Europe.
Well, I bet with that background as well. Do you have any memories of that time? Musical memories of that time before you came to Australia?
I came to Australia when I was actually one.
Yeah.
My mum used to sing me lots of, you know, nursery rhymes and music was very much a part of our life. And my father was, in fact, a good violinist, and he and my mother loved listening to classical music. So I was really brought up on classical music from a very early age, and my parents would typically sit in the lounge room listening to, you know, Mozart and Beethoven and Tchaikovsky and, you know, all those wonderful composers. Mm. So I was, you know, the kid at school. When asked what my favourite pop group was, I'd say, you know, it's Beethoven.
Oh,
so I was considered a bit of a dag.
It was like, move over, Beethoven. What about the Beatles?
That's right. Well, I did, of course, get to love the Beatles as well.
Yeah, okay. And did you play a musical instrument when you were really young? If your father was playing violin, your parents were listening to classical music, what about for you?
Yeah. No, look, I did learn the piano, and so I did... Did play that, but not particularly well. You know, that was never. I love the piano as an instrument, but I was never, you know, fantastic at it. I don't think I took it terribly seriously, and really, I didn't discover singing. I always thought that I had a strong voice, but I really didn't discover singing till I was probably around about 13 or 14, when we could start having singing lessons at school. And my best girlfriend started having lessons, and I asked my mum if I could have lessons, and she said, oh, no, you're far too busy with all these other activities. Well, anyway, I was quite keen to do this. So one night I went round to my girlfriend's house and I asked her if she could teach me the song that she'd been learning at singing lesson, and she could play the piano. So we sang it together a few times, and then she said, I'll play the piano and you sing on your own. And we sang this song. It was an Elizabethan song, I Will Give My Love an Apple, I still remember.
Yeah.
And at the end of the song, she said to me, you should never bother having singing lessons. You're not good enough.
Mm.
And I believed her, you know, like it was one of those things, you know, when we're at that impressionable age, you know, you take a lot of things that are said to you to heart. And so then I did backstage in the school musical because I thought, well, you know, at least I can do the props. And then finally in year 11, I auditioned for the chorus of the musical Oklahoma, which was our school musical that year, and to my amazement, I got the lead role. And of course, that led to really everything else that I've done in music, because ever since then I've had this enormous passion for singing. Of course, there was always that little voice that was saying, you're not good enough and so on. But gradually over the years, I've learned to quieten that voice down and start to really enjoy, connecting, just connecting with audiences and experiencing this magnificent music, in real time with people. There's nothing like live performances.
And that power, yeah. All right. Well, you mentioned Beethoven, and I mentioned the Beatles, and one of the cho you've chosen a song from your youth tonight, which was the Beatles song "Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds." Let's play it, and then we'll chat about this song because it also has a huge impact, I suppose, and influence on your life now.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Cellophane flowers of yellow and green, towering over your head. Look for the girl with the sun in her eyes, and she's gone. Lucy in the sky with diamonds. Lucy in the sky with diamonds. Lucy in the sky with diamonds. Ah. Follow her down to a bridge by a fountain. Her rocking horse people eat marshmallow pies. Everyone smiles as you drift past the flowers that grow so incredibly high. Newspaper taxis appear on the shore, waiting to take you.
Yes, the Beatles and Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. It's one of the songs of influence of Tanya de Jong. She's our guest tonight on Evenings, and she's our music teacher tonight. Now, what did you think that song was about when you were young and you liked it?
I had no idea.
No.
It just was a fun, upbeat song, and I thought it, and I loved the Beatles, and I had absolutely no idea what it meant because I've never had any drugs in my life until 5 years ago. And now, of course, I realise that that song was influenced by, LSD, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, and that the Beatles were actually, tripping on LSD, I think, when they were writing some of these songs, and in particularly that one was informed by a trip with LSD. But, of course, it's really interesting now to look at these psychoactive hallucinogenic medicines as they are now being considered, which are being used to treat some of the most difficult intractable illnesses, including depression and anxiety and post-traumatic stress disorder and addictions, and now being trialled also for a range of other conditions, including anorexia and eating disorders, dementia, obsessive compulsive disorder, and so on. And it's one of those very strange twists of fate that I came across these medicines through a blog of Tim Ferriss. And he was talking about donating $100,000 to a psilocybin trial at Imperial College in London. Well, I had no idea what psilocybin was because I've always you know, because of my singing career, I've never smoked anything.
Yeah, you've had to take really good, careful care of yourself, I imagine.
Absolutely.
Your voice is an incredibly important instrument.
It is, and I've never even, you know, got drunk. And I don't even drink coffee.
Really?
Yeah, I'm very boring.
Gosh. No soft drinks, I would imagine, either, then.
No, not at all. I mean, my tea, you know, I go to a restaurant, I order, you know, chamomile tea with lemon.
Right.
You know. And, I read this article that he had linked by Michael Pollan, the author of the book How to Change Your Mind, which, you know, he had started looking into psychedelic medicines, and there was an article in The New Yorker which talked about a man who was going through a New York University trial that was helping people with end-of-life stress and anxiety to go into remission so that they would actually, you know, really appreciate the last part of their lives rather than being in fear and anxiety. And 80% of those patients had gone into remission. And one of them happened to be a gentleman who had intergenerational Holocaust trauma. And I just really resonated with the article. And I immediately said to my husband, you know, have a look at this. I really think we should try and get into a healthy patients trial.
Right. So feel that you both had that intergenerational trauma from the background you told us about?
Yeah, well, I did feel that, because I could never, whenever anything about the Holocaust came on, I always had to leave the room. So even if it was just, you know, the pyjamas, you know, that they made, you know, the Jews wear in the camps, or anything to do with the Holocaust, it was like I just could not be in the room. So I was being triggered, even though I had not personally, you know, been there myself. And then in the case of my husband, his father had committed suicide when he was 13. So he was, you know, carrying that trauma. And look, realistically, most of us are carrying either our own or our parents or grandparents or a collective trauma.
Right.
Like, we've all got COVID trauma now, apparently.
Well, to some degree, yeah. So you and your husband did found this Mind Medicine Australia, which is supporting this use of medicinal psilocybin. And I know there's a study going on in Melbourne at the moment with people of end of life. And we did talk to Chris Barry, who's working with you, and the former chief of the Defence Force, about work with PTSD. So it seems to me, and you've also always been interested in what music does to the brain. So you seem like you're very interested in this sort of interaction between the past, about sort of certain substances, but also about music and how our brain reacts to things.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, what eventually happened was that Peter and I did have an experience in the Netherlands with a therapeutic guide, you know, fully guided and supervised. And it did take us into a completely other realm where we felt very connected and at one with everything. But it was really incredible to then learn about what was happening in the brain. Like, the neuroscientific benefits of not only singing but also these psychoactive medicines are simply profound. I mean, you get what's called this massive neurogenesis when you ingest psilocybin in a supervised way. I'm not suggesting, by the way, that people should go out and do this. I just want to say that very clearly. We are talking about medically controlled treatments in clinics supervised by trained therapists. But what is remarkable is when you look at the fMRI scans of patients, you see this very increased neuroplasticity of the brain, so the increased neural connections that lead to a sense of greater connection, greater creativity, and that provide an opportunity for the patient to really start to heal under the supervision of a therapist. It provides like a chink of light for people who've usually had just consistent thought loops of I'm not good enough, things won't work out, and so on.
And changing those brain pathways. Yeah. Someone's texted me and said, oh, well, some of the Beatles' Deny Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds was about drugs. You know, someone else said, oh, yes, it was someone's kid who did a picture of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. And perhaps we'll never know for sure, but it certainly sort of sounds trippy. Tanya de Jong is with me. She's my guest tonight on ABC Radio. So, I mean, way before you were interested in all this, you were a teenager who didn't know if they had a voice that then ultimately would lead your career. And we were talking about ABBA, actually, during the quiz, because ABBA have never sort of seemed to go away, and they've been rediscovered again by an entire new generation again. When were they big for you?
Definitely in my teenage years. I mean, you know, I had posters of them all over my walls, and I had, you know, we used to have, do you remember tapes?
Yes.
Cassette tapes.
Yes.
And I used to have all these playlists that I'd make of all my favourite songs of ABBA songs, and I knew the words of every single song, and I used to want to be in ABBA.
Yeah.
I think all of us used to want to be in ABBA, and we thought the boys were cute in ABBA, and we loved the girls, and yeah, and it was just one of those groups, you know, two guys, two girls, interesting that I ended up then, you know, creating my own group with, you know, two female and two male singers. But and we did do some ABBA takeoffs.
Yes. Well, they're just great songs, aren't they? I mean, as someone who knows so much about music, the music of ABBA, it sounds so simple, but it's so clever.
It's incredibly clever.
Yeah. All right. Let's have a little bit of ABBA. Thank you for the music on Evenings. One of Tanya Tiong's great songs that she loves in her life.
I'm nothing special. In fact, I'm a bit of a bore. If I tell a joke, you've probably heard it before. But I have a talent, a wonderful thing, 'cause everyone listens when I start to sing. I'm so grateful and proud. All I want is to sing it out loud. So I say thank you for the music, the songs I'm singing. Thanks for all the joy they're bringing. Who can live without it? I ask in all honesty, what would life be without a song or a dance? What are we? So I say thank you for the music, for giving it to me. Mother says I was a dancer before I could walk. She says I began to sing long before.
ABBA, thank you for the music, the song and the band that got so many of us into music and really, I suppose, just enjoying the art of song. Tanya Tiong loves to sing and she loves to share the art of music, the creativity it untaps within us all and the shared power of it. She is our music teacher tonight. Do you still listen to ABBA occasionally? Like, do you have sort of daggy music days? Yeah.
Oh, no, no, I love it. I mean, I just felt like just singing along the whole time.
Oh, we were singing. Definitely.
No, I mean, no, I love ABBA, and it's really interesting because with the my second charity, Creativity Australia, and the With One Voice program, where we very much use the neuroscientific benefits of singing to bring together fortunate and less fortunate people in With One Voice choirs all over the country. And we share supper and we share a wish list program where people can grant one another's wishes, whether it's free music lessons or helping people with resumes, finding a job, learning English, finding accommodation. Or we've even had marriages through our wish list program.
Really? So people have met at your
choirs?
That's fantastic.
I know. And Abery is something that the choirs, some of the choirs do sing, as you can imagine. It's very popular.
Great. I suppose that this is the thing about music, and people often will feel threatened by classical music and songs they're not familiar with. But they're a great democracy of music, ABBA, a great introduction to music and a way of bringing people together with different tastes, I suppose.
And that's really important. And one of the things that we do insist on with all our choirs is that they don't use any sheet music, because then that just becomes another barrier to access. And a lot of people were not fortunate to learn music or how to read music at school. So if you can just make it, you know, a call and return sort of choir with wonderful conductors, and people just learn by listening, that's a wonderful skill.
And you think anyone can learn to sing?
Yes, I absolutely believe that. I talk about that a lot in my TED talk, how singing together changes the brain. And there's an enormous amount of evidence that shows, I mean, we were born to sing and dance, and tribes have sung and danced as part of our human DNA since the very beginning. And in fact, you know, tribes who did sing and dance together and who still do often did that to build strength and to ward off their enemies. So it's good for us as human beings, and we all need to just get singing a lot more. And I think that would help heal a lot of the mental health issues we're facing as a community as well.
Yeah, and of course that's another thing with COVID, not being able to sing and have those choirs has, you know, been really
We had to pull our choirs online, which, you know, while people still feel connected, it's not the same singing to yourself in your lounge room while you're watching others, but it's better than nothing.
Yep, absolutely true. So you didn't go straight to uni to study singing. I know you played tennis like your mum. She was a great tennis player, but you studied law. When did you go and study singing and music?
Well, actually, when I had got into law school, I actually had got into the conservatorium to study singing, but then I decided that, you know, maybe I should have a bit of a backup, and my parents were sort of encouraging that. So I got into law, but then I think a couple of years later, I then got into the opera school at the Victorian College of the Arts. And so I started simultaneously studying law in the mornings, literally coaching tennis in the afternoons.
What?
And then I'd go to opera school in the evenings.
You did not.
I did, really.
Oh, my gosh. What a day. You have incredible energy, Tanya.
I do. And then I used to coach tennis on the weekends to pay for it
all.
Yeah. And then I started my group Potpourri in 1987 while I was still at law school and at opera school with Jonathan Morton, the wonderful baritone, who we still sing together. And we were, in fact, a couple for over 20 years. And we started singing together in our group Potpourri, just in little gigs. We used to be called the Hums of Poo. We used to sing at little nightclubs and jazz clubs and music societies and all over the place. But then we realised that name wasn't going to take us very far. I mean, Jonathan used to sing funny little songs about Winnie the Pooh. Anyway, we became Potpourri to reflect the diversity of our personalities and repertoire, and we had two other singers join us. So that became two singers. Sorry, two guys, you know, a tenor, a baritone, and two sopranos, or a soprano and mezzo over the years. And so now, actually, Potpourri has been going for, oh my gosh, I hate saying this, it makes me sound so old, but how long is that? 34 years.
A long time.
34 years. Mm. Wow. And we still perform all over the place. We've got another wonderful couple who joined the group, Rebecca and John Bode, and Anthony Barnhill, pianist. So we still do perform, and we also perform overseas, but of course we haven't been able to the last year. But we do perform all over Australia as well, and both at festivals and concerts, and then at special events and conferences and private events. And yeah, the group is magical. I absolutely love singing with Potpourri, and it's been something that's close to my heart. I get goosebumps every time I go on stage with the group. It's just the harmonies of these beautiful voices.
And that's why the singing won over the tennis and the law.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was my deepest passion.
Obviously. Okay, well, let's hear Potpourri's version of Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen, and then you can come back and tell us about why this is the song that you wish you'd written in the world. Now I've heard. Oh, no, that's Leonard's. Hang on. Let's go to yours. That was, of course, if you know Leonard Cohen's version. Here's Potpourri's.
I heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord, but you don't really care for music, do you? Well, it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
Your faith was strong, but you needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof. Her beauty and the moonlight overthrew you. Well, she tied you to a kitchen chair. She broke your throat and she cut your hair.
Potpourri, that's Hallelujah, Tanya de Jong in there. Incredible voices raised together. She is our guest tonight on ABC Evenings as our music teacher. That is just a very beautiful and a very profound song. Why is it the song that you wish that you had written?
Oh, well, it is just so beautiful and profound, as you say. And whenever we perform this song, and it's interesting actually, I forgot to mention, but we've been doing some really interesting flash mob performances, well, pre-COVID.
I love a flash mob. I love it.
I know, it's so fun. And people can go on YouTube and have a look at, they look up Richie's Potpourri Flash Mob.
In a supermarket, no less.
In a supermarket.
Yes. I want that next time I go shopping for fruit and veg.
Oh, it's so amazing. And there, and no matter, in a supermarket or in a concert or under the stars, or we do a lot of performances under the stars outdoors as well. But there are two songs actually I wish I'd written actually when I think about it. One is Hallelujah and the other is Ness and Dorma.
Yes.
From Turandot by Puccini. And look, both of them just somehow connect so strongly with people's hearts. Like people can be like in the middle of their shopping and they'll literally just drop their shopping and they'll just start to cry right in front of us in the supermarket. We often stand on ladders and things and you can just see people. And the same with Ness and Dorma. There's just something about those songs that really, I think, help people just to feel themselves again and raise consciousness and just bring people into the present moment and transcend daily life and just take them to another place.
Yeah, well, to be taken right out of that sort of everyday mundane task of the supermarket to something like that's beautiful. Someone's texted me and said that they've seen Leonard Cohen do it and they also love Katie Lang's version. She has a beautiful version as well. I mean, it makes me think for you, you talked about your grandparents and your dad, and I know I was listening to some of your Sound Sessions album with mantras on them. What is your spiritual life? Because is it about music? Is that sort of your spirituality that accesses you into different forms of belief?
I think that's right, actually. I mean, I think that music does really take me into my special spiritual place. And I've never, though I was born Jewish, I don't think of myself as being Jewish in the sense of, you know, following some particular tradition in that way or any other type of tradition for that matter. It's more of a universal connectivity. And I think for me, it's about how do you raise people's consciousness. And one of the really interesting things about the Mind Medicine Australia work we're doing now with these psychedelic medicines is that a large part of the medicinal process in medical clinics is actually the creation of a very applicable playlist, you know, which goes right from, you know, the ingestion of the medicine right through, you know, the build up through the peaks of that experience and then coming out of that. And it's very important at what particular music is played at the particular parts of that experience for the patient to really get the full extent of that experience. And so I love creating playlists for these medicines,
for
7.5-hour playlists.
Gosh, 7.5 hours, yeah.
Yes,
well, that's the experience. Okay. Mm-hmm. We often talk, you mentioned, you know, doing fun pop-up gigs and flash mobs in supermarkets and unexpected places. And we often ask people about a great gig. As a musician, you've done, of course, some wonderful gigs yourself and played in all sorts of places around the world in, you know, all sorts of halls and outdoors. But what about a gig you've been to? Now, you've chosen Elton John, who, my gosh, it was only the beginning of last year he was doing his Swan Song Farewell Tour, which got cut by COVID. When did you see Elton?
Well, no, actually, well, I've seen him a few times because my father was a huge Elton John and Billy Joel fan. So we used to go to quite a lot of Elton John and Billy Joel. So apart from Beethoven, he did love those.
Beethoven, Mozart, Billy Joel, Elton John. Yeah.
Correct. And so I had seen him then, but I actually did see him last year as well, but the performance was rained out with the most massive thunderstorm in the middle of it at Rochford Winery in Victoria. And the promoter, in fact, Michael Gudinski, I think, came out on stage and said, no, we'll be back. We'll make sure that everyone who's here tonight, you know, gets to come back and experience the second half of the show. But, of course, COVID came and it never happened. But it was still amazing for half a concert. But, no, I always loved Elton John and this song, Your Song, it's just such a beautiful song and, yeah, reminds me a bit of you know, the deep love I have for my husband, and it's very special.
This feeling inside, I'm not one of those who can easily hide. I don't have much money, but boy, if I did, I'd buy a big house where we both could live. If I was a sculptor, but then again, no, or a man who makes potions in a traveling show. I know it's not much, but it's the best I can do. My gift is my song, and this one's for you. And you can tell everybody this is your song. It may be quite simple, but now that it's done, I hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind that I put down in the words how wonderful life is while you're in the world. I sat on the roof and kicked off the moss. Well, a few of the verses, well, they've got me quite cross. But the sun's been quite kind while I wrote this song. It's for people like you that keep it turned on. So excuse me for getting, but these things I do, see, I've forgotten if they're green or they're blue. Anyway, the thing is, what I really mean, yours are the sweetest eyes I've ever seen. And you can tell everybody this is the song. It may be quite simple, but now that it's done, I hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind that I put down in the words how wonderful life is while you're in the world. I hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind that I put down in the words how wonderful life is while you're in the world.
Where's Elton John? The wonderful Your Song on ABC Evenings, chosen by Tanya De Jong. She's a soprano, speaker, businesswoman, creative and social entrepreneur, and a real lover of music and creativity. And she also co-founded Mind Medicine Australia. We've been chatting about some of those things as our music teacher tonight. I want to talk about Bette Midler before we finish up, and what she means to you, because she's just an extraordinary, and like you, she's a really diverse performer. She loves all sorts of different styles of music and brings great energy to it.
Yeah, well, I was always a huge fan of Bette Midler, and certainly once I started to sing and have singing lessons, I really loved to sing some of her songs, and I love the diversity of her performances. Similarly, actually, Barbara Streisand, who, you know, did a wonderful version also of Avinu Malkeinu, the song that you played at the start. But yeah, I love the fact that she's been a wonderful actress. You know, she's sung a lot of diverse repertoire. Courageous woman, and I like strong women.
Yeah. And In the Rose, the film about this song, it's sort of loosely based on Janis Joplin's life. And she was sort of like a fire, like she, you know, a firecracker who just left us way too soon.
And so many wonderful singers have left us way too soon.
Yeah. Yeah. This sounds like a heck of a song to sing. Is this an extraordinarily hard song to sing?
It is actually really hard. And actually I realised that when I was, you know, in my early years when I thought, you know, I'm going to be able to sing this song, and I was at, I think, a music camp or something, and I chose this song to sing, and then I really think I stuffed it up terribly.
I don't believe it. Really? It's
yeah,
even
I
hard for
so.
You?
Well, it was then. It's much easier for me now.
Yeah.
But it's not an easy song to sing, and also just the range of it, it sits sort of in the lower part of certainly a soprano's voice. So I think it's better suited to someone with a slightly lower range. But it is a beautiful song.
Yeah. Let's hear The Rose on Evenings. Bette Midler.
Some say love, it is a river that drowns the tender reed. Some say love, it is a razor that leaves soul to bleed. Some say love, it is a hunger, an endless aching need. I say love, it is a only seed. It's the heart afraid of breaking that never learns to dance. It's the dream afraid of waking that never takes the chance. It's the one who won't be taken, who cannot seem to give. And the soul afraid of dying that never learns to live. When the night has been too lonely and the road has been too long, and you think that love is only for the lucky and the strong, just remember in the winter, far beneath the bitter snow, lies the seed that with the sun's love in the spring.
Is The Rose, Bette Midler. That's an incredible song. Tanya Yeong has chosen it tonight. It was one of the influential songs in her life. Tom is loving the beautiful music as he's sowing on his tractor tonight, Tanya. This is the way, all different ways people listen to music. Isn't it interesting?
It's so beautiful.
It's fantastic. So you're putting together this incredible show at the moment that will open later on this year that tells the story of your grandmother and based on the book that your mum wrote. And so you're hard at work on that at the moment.
Yes.
Do you, when you are working on something like that, how do you relax? Do you listen to different sorts of music to sort of, you know, take it, when music is your life and your work, what do you listen to switch off from life and work?
You know, actually I quite like silence.
Yes.
Sometimes, and I love listening to the music of the ocean and the music of nature, the music of the birds. I find a lot of peace from that. But every night I actually listen to an interesting music program just to lull me into sleep, which is called Holosync, which is really just waves, you know, white noise. But it's been very sequenced to entrain into the brain. And I also listen to another really interesting program sometimes just to give me power naps or help me recover from my crazy schedule called New Calm. That's a really interesting program I listen to of music that has particular frequencies that really help you to recover or relax or recharge.
Right. Interesting. Okay, well, I want to finish on another one from Potpourri, and this is Song to... Oh, no, this is you, Tanya. This is you. Song to the Moon from Flying Free, actually. We're going to finish on this because this is one of your favourite arias. And tell us about the night you were performing this and the moon came out.
Yeah, well, that was also at Rochford Winery where I was watching Elton John last year. But a few years before that, Potpourri were performing Opera Under the Stars, and it was in March, but it was extremely cold, as can happen in, you know, all over the place now, but in Victoria, and it was a bit drizzly. I mean, it nearly felt like it was going to start snowing. We're out there in our strappy, you know, dresses. And then, amazingly, when I started to sing Rzolka's Song to the Moon, the rain stopped, the moon came out. And it's always been one of my favourite operatic arias. So very beautiful.
And the magic happened that you make. Thanks so much for being our guest tonight.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you. It's a real honour to speak with you.
It's been wonderful to have you. Tanya de Jong, she's a singer, speaker, creative and social entrepreneur. And here's Song to the Moon. She's been our music teacher tonight on Evenings. Thanks, Tanya.
Thank you.
Song to the Moon by Tanya de Jong.